What's up? Today we're going to talk about basic bacteriology. We're going to do microbiology in like a couple portions. This first episode is just going to be basic bacteriology. Then I'm going to go into the bacteria, then the viruses, then the parasites, fungi, etc., etc. So let's start with basic bacteriology. We're going to start talking about the cell envelope. So the first layer, the outermost layer of the cell envelope, is the capsule. These are made of polysaccharides, and this protects the bug from phagocytosis. The second layer is the slime layer. It is made of loose polysaccharides, and it adheres to surfaces and contributes to biofilms. The next layer is the outer membrane. Outer is endotoxin like LPS and LOS. Middle layer is Pouens and OMP, and then the inner layer is phospholipids. The outer membrane is in gram-negative bugs only. And then an example of an endotoxin is lipid A. Lipid A induces TNF and IL-1 release. And then also another endotoxin is antigenic O polysaccharide component. Next layer is the periplasm. It is located between the cell membrane and the outer membrane, also in gram-negatives only because only gram-negatives have outer membranes. The periplasm is made of hydrolytic enzymes like beta-lactamases. The next layer is the cell wall. It is made of peptidoglycans, which are sugar backbones with amino side chains linked together by transpeptidase, and it provides rigid support, protecting against osmotic pressure damage. Thick cell walls are gram-positive bugs. That's what makes them stain purple. And then thin cell walls are gram-negatives. And then our last layer is the innermost layer. It is the cell membrane. This is a phospholipid bilayer with embedded PBPs and other enzymes, oxidative and transport enzymes. Gram-positive bugs only have lipoteichoic acids in their cell membrane, and this induces TNF-alpha release and IL-1 release. Okay, so those are the layers of the cell envelope. Now we're going to talk about staining. So we know the classic Gram stains. It stains for peptidoglycans in the cell walls. The following bugs don't stain well. Treponema, Leptospira, Mycobacteria, Mycoplasma, Ureaplasma, Legionella, Rickettsiae, Chlamydia, Bartonella, Anaplasma, Ehrlichia. I don't know how to say that one. It causes ehrlichiosis or whatever. And there are multiple reasons why these don't stain well. Mycoplasma and ureaplasma have no cell walls. Mycobacteria, the cell wall has a high lipid content. Treponema and Leptospira, those are too thin. And then the rest of them, Legionella, Rickettsiae, Chlamydia, Bartonella, Anaplasma, and Ehrlichia, these are primarily intracellular. And chlamydia, in addition to that, lacks the classic peptidoglycan due to the decreased muriatic acid. And the way that first aid remembers these things is these little microbes may unfortunately lack real color, but are everywhere. So these, treponema, little, leptospira, microbes, mycobacteria, may, mycoplasma, unfortunately, ureaplasma, lack, legionella, real, rickettsia, color, chlamydia, bartonella, but are anaplasma, everywhere, ehrlichia. Okay, the next stain is Giemsa, and the bugs that we stain with Giemsa are H. pylori, chlamydia, Borrelia, Rickettsiae, trypanosomes, I hate that one, and Plasmodium as well, aka malarias. And the way that first aid remembers it is gimme help. Certain bugs really try my patience. So gimme for Giemsa. HELP for H. pylori, CERTAIN for chlamydia, BUGS, Borrelia, TRY for trypanosomes, oh, really TRY, so really for rickettsiae, TRY for trypanosomes, and my patient's Plasmodium. Next stain is the PAS stain, the PAS stain. This stains glycogen and mucopolysaccharides. We diagnose Whipple's disease, which is Trophirum Whippley. Yeah, that's a PAS positive. Next stain is Carbol Fuchsin, also known as Zeal Nelson, I don't know how to say it. This stains mycolic acid for the acid fast bacteria. The acid fast bacteria include the mycobacteria and nocardia. Yeah, nice. Oh, and some protozoa like cryptosporidium oocysts. Next stain is India ink. We use India ink for cryptosporidium neoformans. Next stain is the silver stain. Silver stain we use for H. pylori, Legionella, Bartonella henselae, and fungi such as Coccidioides, Pneumocystis jirovecii, and Aspergillus fumigatus. And the way that first aid remembers it is helicopters are silver. So helicopter H for H. pylori, and the L in helicopter for Legionella, the C in helicopter for Coccidioides, the P in helicopter for Pneumocystitis jirovecii, and then R silver, the A is for Aspergillus, and then the silver is obviously for the silver stain. And then the last type of staining they talk about are fluorescent antibody stains. For example, FTA ABS for syphilis. We can also use fluorescent antibody staining for Pneumocystitis jirovecii, Giardia, and Cryptosporidium. So that wasn't even the worst part, because now we're going to talk about culture mediums. So culture mediums, chocolate agar. Chocolate agar contains factors V, which is NAD, and factor X, which is hematin. We use this for H. influenza. Thayer Martin, and when I say we use this for, I mean it grows on this agar. Thayer Martin agar, it contains TMP plus colistin, and it stains, the only thing that grows on Thayer Martin agar is Neisseria. So the purpose of the TMP and colistin is so that no gram negatives grow except for Neisseria. Then it also has vanc in it for no gram positive growth, and nystatin in it for no fungal group growth. So the way that first aid remembers it is Thayer Martin is very typically cultures Neisseria. Very, the V is for vanc, T typically is for TMP, cultures is for colistin, and then N is for nystatin. Only Neisseria can grow on that agar. Next is Bordeaux Gingo. I don't know how to say it. It contains potato extract, and what grows on this Bordeaux Gingo is pertussis, Bordetella pertussis. And they remember it, board it for Bordetella, so per. The next one is the Reagan Lowe. This has charcoal, blood, and antibiotics, and pertussis also grows on this Reagan Lowe. Next is the Loeffler medium, and also known as tellurite agar. Or maybe they're separate agars, and the only thing that grows on both of them is C. diphtheria. The next agar is Lowenstein Jensen. Also included in this is the Middlebrook and the Rapid Broth culture. What can you grow in these three things? M. tuberculosis. So just to repeat, Lowenstein Jensen, Middlebrook, and Rapid Broth cultures. The next is the Eaton agar. Eaton agar requires cholesterol, and what grows on this is Mycoplasma pneumoniae. I like to think you're eating the cholesterol. The Mycoplasma pneumoniae eats the cholesterol. And then the next is McConkey agar. McConkey is for lactose fermenters. The lactose fermentation creates acid, which makes the agar turn a pink color. And this is for lactose fermenting enterics. The next is eosin methylene blue, which is called EMB agar. This is it colonies with green metallic sheens. The only thing that grows on this EMB agar is E. coli. Next is, and it makes a green metallic sheen. The next is buffered charcoal yeast with cysteine and iron. What grows on this? Brucella, Francisella, Legionnaire, and Pasteurella. And the way that First Aid remembers it is the Ella siblings, Bruce, Francis, and a Legion, and a Pastor, built the Sistine Chapel out of charcoal and iron. So I'll say that again. The Ella siblings, which is Brucella, Francisella, a Legionnaire, and a Pastor built the Sistine Chapel out of charcoal and iron. I don't know. It would be better if they said the Ella twins, so I knew there was just two, because I got confused. The Ella twins, Bruce and Francis, a Legionnaire and a Pastor, built the Sistine Chapel out of charcoal and iron. I don't know how that helped, but it did. Okay, the next is Saborod agar, and this does fungi. And the way the First Aid remembers is they say Sab's a fungi. Cool. Next is blood agar, and this detects the hemolytic bacteria. There are, I think, technically three different reactions it can have, but First Aid only thinks that two are board relevant, so that's what I'm going to say. There's the beta hemolytics. This does complete red blood cell lysis, so you get clear colonies on blood agar. The following bugs are beta hemolytic: S. aureus, S. pyogenes, and S. agalacticae, as well as L. monocytogenes. The second reaction on blood agar is alpha hemolytic. This is for partial hemoglobin oxidation. They grow green/brown on blood agar without clearing. And the following bugs are alpha hemolytic, and that is S. pneumoniae and S. viridans. Okay, now we're going to talk about ability to use oxygen. So anaerobes lack catalase plus and or SOD, which is, I think, superoxide dismutase. This makes them susceptible to oxidative damage. They are foul-smelling due to short-chain fatty acids. They're hard to culture. They produce gas in tissue, with the gas being CO2 and H2. They are normal in our GI tract, though. And treatment-wise, antibiotics-wise, aminoglycosides are useless because aminoglycosides require oxygen to enter the bacterial cell. The way that First Aid remembers the anaerobes is can't breathe fresh air. So can't, Clostridioides and Clostridium, breathe, Bacteroides, fresh, Fusobacterium, and air, Actinomyces. The next group are facultative anaerobes. This means that they can live with or without oxygen. I think it means that they prefer without, but they can grow with. And these bugs are strep, staph, and the enteric gram negatives, for example, E. coli. The next group are obligate intracellular bacteria. So we're off of oxygen. I didn't talk about the aerobes. Whatever. I guess First Aid didn't feel the... If they're not anaerobes and they're not facultative anaerobes, they have to be aerobes. So next we're going to talk about obligate intracellulars. These are obligate intracellular because they rely on host ATP. And the way that First Aid remembers it is stay inside when it's really chilly cold. So stay, Salmonella, inside, Neisseria. I don't know if I'm doing that right. Some nasty bugs. Yeah, I wasn't doing it right. stay inside when it's really chilly cold. There's only three of them. So really chilly cold, Rickettsia, Chlamydia, and Coxiella. Okay, per. And those are obligate intracellular. And then there's facultative intracellular, which means they can live inside the cell. They like the cell, but they can live outside. And they remember this as some nasty bugs may live facultatively. And that is some Salmonella, nasty, Neisseria, bugs, Brucella, May, Mycobacterium, live, Listeria, and then the F in facultatively, Franciella, the L, Legionella, and the Y is Yersinia pestis. Okay, cool. Next, we're going to talk about encapsulated bacteria. A capsule is an antiphagocytic virulence factor. These bugs get opsonized and cleared by the spleen. Therefore, asplenic patients have higher risks of encapsulated infection. They remember this with, please shine my skis. So please, P. aeruginosa, S. and shine, S. pneumonia, HIB, influenza B, N. meningitis, E. coli. That was shine. And then my is, there's no letters. And then skis, S. salmonella, K. klebsiella, and I, and S. for GBS. And then to remember the ones that are the like highest risk in asplenics is no spleen here for N. meningitis, S. pneumonia, and HIB. Next are the urease positive bugs. So urease is an enzyme that hydrolyzes urea into NH4 and CO2, increasing pH. These bugs, the urease positive bugs, predispose to struvite stones, especially the Proteus species. They remember this with P. chunks, so P. Proteus, chunks, Cryptococcus, H. pylori, urea plasma, Nocardia, Klebsiella, S. epidermidis, S. saprophyticus, and that's P. chunks, so cool. Nice. And also worth mentioning about the encapsulated bacteria are that capsules can be used as the antigens in vaccines. So the Hib and meningitis, like, we have vaccines against those, and I'm pretty sure they're capsular vaccines. Nice. Okay, now catalase-positive bugs. Catalase-positive, catalase is an enzyme that degrades hydrogen peroxide, or H2O2, into water and O2 bubbles before it can be bactericidal by MPO. So the bugs with catalase, they degrade the hydrogen peroxide before our immune cells can, like, use it against them to, like, kill them. So people with chronic granulomatous disease, which is an NADPH oxidase deficiency, they have recurrent catalase-positive bug infections. The catalase-positive bugs include Candida, Pseudomonas, Nicardia, Bordetella pertussis, Burkholderia capacea, Helicobacter pylori, Aspergillus, Staphylococci, Serratia, Listeria, E. coli, and they remember this as catalase-positive, notoriously big bubbling hassle. Oh well, I'm not going to go back through that. Next are the pigment producers. So the first pigment producer is Actinomyces israel, and this creates yellow sulfur granules, which are bacterial filaments, and they remember it as Israel has yellow sand. Next is S. aureus, which is gold. Next is Pseudomonas aeruginosa, which is blue-green, which is procyanin and proviridin. Next is Serratia marcescens. I don't know how to say the second word. And this does red. It produces red pigment. And they remember it as Sriracha sauce red, because Serratia sounds like Sriracha, so Sriracha sauce red. Biofilms, patients with catheters and prosthetic devices, that's going to be S. epidermidis forming the biofilms, patients with dental plaques and infective endocarditis, that is S. mutans and S. sanguinis, these are the strep viridin species. Patients with CF, ventilator pneumonia, or contact keratitis, that's Pseudomonas aeruginosa. And otitis media is H. influenza, which is non-typable slash the non-encapsulated H. influenza. So those are the bugs and what kind of biofilms they form. Next are the spore-forming bugs. These bugs create spores when nutrients are limited. They have a core of dipicolinic acid? I don't know. And that gives heat resistance. And they remember it as autoclave to kill Bacillus and Clostridium, or ABC. So autoclave for anthrax to kill Bacillus and Clostridium, and that is for Bacillus and Clostridium. Duh. The anthraxis, you have anthrax, B. cereus, Clostridium botulinum, Clostridioides difficile, Clostridium perfringens, and Clostridium tetani. Okie doke. So we mentioned some virulence factors, some of them. We're going to talk about specific virulence factors now, three big ones. Protein A is the first one. It is made by Staph aureus. Protein A binds the Fc portion of IgG to prevent opsonization and phagocytosis. The next virulence factor is IgA protease. IgA protease cleaves IgA, allowing the bacteria to bind mucous membranes. This is produced by S. pneumonia, HIB, and Neisseria. Just to repeat, S. pneumonia, HIB, and Neisseria produce IgA protease that cleaves IgA, allowing bacteria to bind the mucous membrane. The third is the M. protein. M protein does molecular mimicry of human cardiac myosin, and this is made by group A strep, specifically rheumatic heart disease is like what M protein causes. So M protein molecular mimicry myosin. Now we're going to talk about antibiotic resistance and the methods of doing it. So the antibiotic resistance conveyed against tetracyclines, sulfonamides, and fluoroquinolones is they either increase efflux or decrease uptake. Next, bugs can cleave these drugs, penicillin C, cephalosporins, and carbapenems. Next is the bug changes the drug. These are aminoglycosides and chloramphenicol. And then bugs can also modify the drug targets. So bugs can modify rRNA to make linezolid, I can never say that one, and macrolides obsolete. They can modify cell wall to prevent vanc from working. They can modify enzymes to make penicillinase-resistance penicillins, cephalosporins, sulfonamides, and fluoroquinolones to not work. So that's that. Then on to bacterial genetics. Okay, so bacterial genetics, they can do horizontal gene transfer. This is the main mechanism for transfer of antibiotic resistance, horizontal gene transfer. So here are the types or terms. There is transformation. Transformation is when a bacteria binds and imports short pieces of naked bacterial DNA from the environment. Adding deoxyribonuclease prevents transformation. Bacteria, S. pneumonia, Hib, and Neisseria. So they gobble up bare DNA that's just in their environment, and then they incorporate it into their DNA. Next is conjugation. There are two types of conjugation. There is F positive times F negative. F positive is fertility factor. So in the F positive with an X negative bacteria, one of the bacteria has a fertility factor plasmid, which is a sex pilus and a conjugation gene. So the F positive bacteria will contact the F negative bacteria, and then through that pilus, the sex pilus, a single-strand DNA plasmid crosses it, and that's called a conjugal mating bridge, the pilus. And this causes no transfer of chromosomal DNA, though. It's just the plasmid, I guess. And then there is HFR times F negative. This is... So when the F plasmid is incorporated into the bacterial chromosomal DNA, it makes the HFR cell. And HFR cell stands for high frequency recombinant. It's transfer of leading part of plasmid plus flanking chromosomal genes. HFR may integrate into some bacterial genes. The recipient cell remains F negative, but all of those new subsequent generations will have the new genes. I'm going to try to straighten that out a little bit. Jesus Christ. Okay, so F positive times F negative. The F positive bacteria has genes for sex pilus and conjugation. The F negative cell does not. The F positive cell forms a conjugal bridge with the F negative cell. The single strand of plasmid DNA is then transferred to the F negative cell. The result is two F positive cells with no transfer of chromosomal DNA. Great. Next is HFR times F negative cell. So the HFR cell is an F positive cell. It's an F positive plasma incorporated into bacterial DNA, and it's the high frequency recombination cell. That's a F positive cell. So the HFR is like the mutated F positive cell. That joins with the F negative cell, but not via conjugal bridge. The leading portion of the plasma that it wishes to transfer literally just goes straight into the F negative cell. And then you have your HFR original cell plus a recombinant F negative cell. That recombinant F negative cell remains F negative, but it then produces subsequent generations with the new genes in it. That was freaking awful. Okay, transduction. Oh my god, there's two types again. Okay, generalized transduction is packaging error. This is a lytic phage infects a bacterium, causing bacterial DNA cleavage. Then we get package in phase capsid. The phage infects another bacterium that leads to transfer of genes. And then we have specialized. It is an excision event. So lysogenic phage infects bacterium, viral DNA incorporation into the bacterial chromosome. And then when the phage DNA is excised, bacterial genes are excised with it, forming a phage capsid, which goes on to infect another bacterium. That was awful. Nice. Certain bacterial toxin genes are encoded in lysogenic phages for ABCDS, A for strep A, erythrogenic toxin, B for botulinum toxin, C for cholera toxin, D for diphtheria, and S for sugar toxin. So all of those have bacterial toxins. They're encoded in lysogenic phages. Next is transposition. Transposition is quote-unquote jumping process. So a transposon is a specialized DNA segment that can copy and excise itself and then reinsert itself into DNA. It is critical in creating plasmids with MDR and transfer across species. Next, we're going to talk about exotoxin versus endotoxin, and that will round out the general microbiology. Exotoxins are secreted from cells. They are polypeptides. Their genes are located in plasma or bacteriophage. Exotoxins are really fatal. They'll X you out. It induces high titer antibodies, aka antitoxins. Toxoids are used as vaccines. Typical diseases, tetanus, botulism, diphtheria, and cholera, all of those have their exotoxins, their toxoids. Exotoxoids are destroyed at 60 degrees Celsius, except for staph, staph enterotoxin, E. coli heat stable toxin, and B. cereus emetic toxin. So those are heat stable rather than heat labile. So that was staph, enterotoxin, E. coli, heat stable toxin, and B. cereus emetic toxin. Next are the endotoxins. Endotoxins are found on gram-negative outer cell membranes. They are not secreted. Exotoxins secreted. Endotoxin on the gram-negative cell membrane, not secreted. So examples, lipid A component of LPS, that gets released when LPS is lysed. Genes located for endotoxins are in the bacterial chromosome. They have low toxicity and they're poorly antigenic. So that means that there's no toxoids, no vaccines. The endotoxins are released, not secreted. What the fuck? I guess, okay, it's released when lysed, not secreted. Whatever. The MOA, the mechanism of action for endotoxins, is that they induce TNF, IL-1, and IL-6. They are stable at 100 degrees Celsius for 1 hour. Examples of bugs that produce endotoxin is meningococcemia and sepsis by gram-negative rods. So examples of endotoxin is O antigen and core polysaccharide, and the toxic component of lipid A, plus lipo-oligopolysaccharide, only in Neisseria. Yeah, so endotoxin released via lysis or blebbing. Three main effects of endotoxin is macrophage activation. So macrophage activation via TLR4, CD14. Next effect is complement activation, and the third effect is tissue factor activation, which increases clotting. Endotoxins. Okay, so endotoxin, all caps, E for edema, N for NO, which is like nitric oxide, D for DIC and death, O for outer membrane, T for TNF-alpha, O for O antigen plus polysaccharide plus lipid A, I for IL-1 and IL-6, N for neutrophil chemotaxis, and S for shock. Endotoxins. I don't know where was the X? E-N-D-O-T-O. There's no X. Okay, whatever. Okay. Okay, anyways, that was the end of it. That was the end of the basic bacteriology. The next go-round, we will talk about gram-positive bugs. Okay, goodbye.